It is a 9 till noon show and it's Michaela Clark standing in today for Greg Hughes. Now, we are joined by Dr. Dermot O'Kelly, ESRI Postdoctoral Research Fellow and the co-author of the study Effects of Inducements on Sports Gambling and Decision Errors. Gambling offers such as free bets and money-back guarantees lure people to bet more, making those at risk of problem gambling especially vulnerable, new research has shown. Good morning to you, Doctor.
Good morning, Michaela.
So tell us a bit about this study. Obviously, it's an issue we have talked about for quite a long time. This obviously spurred you on to carry out this. So what was the main takeaway from it?
So the main takeaway from the study was that these gambling offers, free bets, money back offers, these kind of things, gets people to gamble more, right? So people who saw offers in our study gambled 10% more than people who didn't see offers, and also makes them less likely to opt out of betting. So people were 50% less likely to choose not to bet. And I guess most concerning is that those who are at risk of problem gambling, for those people, the effects of the offers were stronger.
And it obviously shows there's been so much, you know, talk about these ads being shown, but it shows that, you know, the gambling industry seems to kind of pick on anything that they can effectively get away with to get that money in.
Well, yeah, so up until last year when the Gambling Regulation Act was passed, October last year, you could say that, you know, a lot of gambling advertising and so on was effectively unregulated. Now, the new Regulation Act does provide for much more stringent regulation of ads, gambling advertisement overall, such as there's a 5 a.m. to 9 p.m. watershed going to be brought in for TV ads. There's restrictions on online advertising without consent and so on. And there's also some provision there for the banning of offers targeted at specific individuals, right? But what our findings say is, basically our findings show that these offers really pose a real risk of financial harm to individuals, particularly vulnerable individuals who have gambling problems. And it does strengthen the case for increased regulation, for the regulation of these offers to go beyond what's already in the legislation. So other European countries have done things like prohibiting giving offers to those who are at risk of problem gambling and capping the maximum value of offers, or another one is that you could ban giving offers to people to sign up as new customers. So there are just a few things that have already been done in other European countries. And yeah, as I said, there's scope there for the regulation to go further, I think, to prevent gambling harms.
And in terms of the research that you carried out, talk to me a bit about that sample of people. Was it very targeted on your behalf?
Yes, it was. So we focused on men under the age of 40. There's two reasons. Number one, that particular group has the highest prevalence of problem gambling, right? So we did a study in 2023 where we showed that 1 in 30 adults in Ireland has problem gambling. That's 3%. For men in that age category, it's up around 5 or 6%, right? And the second thing is that I guess that age group is most likely to engage in sports betting. And also there's research out there that says, and anecdotally, you would hear lots of stories that men of this in this particular age bracket are particularly targeted by advertisements and these gambling offers in particular, on podcasts, online, on TV, whatever it is. So we thought it was important to focus on that particular group because they're most at risk.
And I suppose one of the worrying points within this is that participants were asked about their understanding of inducements, and even though, despite them being regular bettors, they didn't realise that there were restrictions then on the free bets. And I'm sure there's so many people like that.
Yes, that was another worrying finding, you could say. So yeah, we check people's understanding of the terms and conditions and restrictions on the bets and the offers we had shown them during the study. And yeah, as you say, a lot of people, many of them regular bettors, didn't realize that, for example, with a free bet, that once you use that bet, and even if you win with it, you only get the winnings back and you don't get the stake. And that's standard practice in the real world with gambling operators. And yeah, so essentially a lot of misunderstanding of the restrictions on these inducements, making people think that they're more valuable than they really are.
And do you have any figures as to how much money would have been spent on these, the inducement bets?
During the experiment, is it?
Yeah.
During our study. So we know that the participants who saw, so we had two groups of participants. One group saw offers and the other group didn't see offers, right? So the group that saw offers bet 10% more than the group that did see offers. I don't have it off the top of my head now what the euro value that was,
Yeah,
but
I suppose it depends what the initial bet was, but even that 10% is quite a big increase.
it is indeed, yeah. And when you consider that, the overall on average, the betting for the better is a loss making loss making activity, in that the bookie or the gambling operator will on average over time profit out of it. So it indicates higher levels of financial losses. And also another aspect of the study that was quite illuminating for us was that we so for some for most of the bets that participants saw, the odds were set at the odds being offered by online gambling operators at that time. So this was for Euro 2024 matches, right? But for a small number of bets, we reduced the odds to make them unfavorable to the bettor. So they were well
Right.
below the market rate, right? So that meant that essentially it was really bad value for the participant to choose that bet. But when participants saw offers, they were actually more than three times more likely to pick those bad value bets, which indicates that these inducements can push people into making bad decisions that can lead to, potentially large financial losses.
Yeah, but you even see it now, the case of, these online competitions. If you sign up for one, you're signed up and you get so many emails being they would claim, oh, you can buy this ticket for £1 and you can win 20,000. There's just so much of it. It's so widespread at the moment.
Yes, so yeah, sure. There's a lot of different the offers are a very, very heavily used marketing tool, not just in sports betting, but also for, as you said, competitions, for things like the online casino gambling, slot machines, these kind of things. So certainly, as I said, there's room there for, and there's certainly a case there for increased regulation to if nothing else, to reduce the extent to which people are being bombarded with these offers and gambling advertising more generally.
And do you believe that the free bet should be cut completely, or that there just needs to be more regulation of it?
To be honest, it's not for me to say. So our evidence shows that these things can cause these offers, free bets, money back guarantees. They run a real risk of financial harm, right, for consumers and especially people with problem gambling. But in the end of the day, policy making is a very complex process. So yeah, but yeah, as I said, there's scope there for increased regulation,
Yeah.
certainly.
Dr. Dermot O'Kelly, thank you so much for joining us this morning. That's certainly a topic that always interests a lot of people, gambling and the issue of free bet. And you can understand how so many people get caught up in that, and you can understand why the gambling companies target individuals as well. Just a quick look at some of your comments. After Crawley Dolls finished up in what is now the Crawley Distillery, Nouveau Temps started on the 10th of March 1980 and was producing transformers and was in operation for years before closing. I worked there for 7 years, a listener says. Three scam calls in the last 24 hours from Revolut, a 32 number, Belgium. I don't answer as I have no contacts in Belgium. Please be careful, a listener says. Another, let's all get behind Donegal. More flags up around the place. I must say, even though I'm from Tyrone, that I love the buzz it creates, and I love seeing the signs out, you know, we're supporting Donegal, and seeing the flags up in people's cars. It does create a great buzz. Another listener says, I would like to point out that I am in no way opposed to organ donation. It's the opt-out clause that I have the issue with. Some of your comments now again. Hi, just to let people know that the Farland Walk in Burt is badly growing over. Single file where two people could easily walk side by side. Who's responsible for taking care of it? It's not nice. Do any others find it neglected? The lady mentioning waiting a month to get keys for their social housing home. That's standard practice, as I was in that situation myself, and ended up with a brilliant social house. Another listener says, we need penalty points for drivers that are driving too slow. Some people have hospital appointments. I'm waiting on an operation since 2019. If that surgical hub had have came to Donegal, I may have stood a chance of getting it done shortly. Looks like I have another few years to wait. Another listener says, I heard that the minor injuries part in the A&E will be shutting as the managers and consultants won't hire people to staff it. Maybe ask the hospital management and the minister about this. I had an exceptionally great experience in the Purple Pathway with my kids. Well, the hospital says that there are no plans to close the minor injury section of Letterkenny University Hospital's emergency department at the moment. I'm joined now on the line by Gary McCross, and you'll remember Gary, he's the father of Zach, and as a family they've travelled to the Netherlands for treatment, and delighted to be joined by Gary now. Good morning. We'll get back to Gary now. I think I put up the wrong feeder there, but we'll get to him shortly. Some of your comments now in the meantime. Hi, Greg. Councillor Jerry McMonigal was on regarding Donegal County Council being bottom of the new league table for the provision of social housing. He spent the best part of an hour rhyming off the usual excuses and defending the indefensible. He blamed the 2008 economic crash. He blamed lack of funding from government. He blamed the slow process. He blamed defective blocks. The fact of the matter is that the council, despite being aware of a defective blocks crisis for over a decade, has failed to put social housing on the county development plan. Councillor Canning stated on your show during the last election that social housing was not included because the council are fully on top of the housing list. Councillor McMonigal admitted that people are presenting as homeless on a daily basis and they have nowhere to go. We did have that discussion earlier in the week, and Councillor McMonigal did say that there are plans for housing included in the county development plan. I'm joined now, I think, by Gary McCross. And good morning to you, Gary.
Morning, Michaela. How's things?
I'm good. So, Gary, you're the father of Zach, and you've travelled to the Netherlands for Zach's first bone marrow transplant. How did things go with the operation?
Yeah, so Zach would have got his bone marrow stem cell transplant on yesterday. So yesterday would be classed as day zero in the hematology world. So the transplant itself, we can say it was a success, but ultimately it's a long kind of drawn out process in advance, and you know, for a number of weeks after the fact as well. So like a bone marrow transplant wouldn't necessarily be a surgical swap, if that makes sense. It's not like there's a surgeon, you know, going in and removing his bone marrow and replacing it with the donor's. It's more of it's kind of, it goes in through an IV basically. So the ultimately when a donor is donating the bone marrow, there's a whole procedure done with a surgical procedure done with the donor, and their bone marrow samples are removed, and there's some work done with them in the lab then. And then they're put into like an IV drip, we'll say. So, you know, Zach's treatment ultimately would have started last week, and that would have been mainly to suppress his current immune system. So he would have got a series of chemotherapy and immunosuppressant drugs to bring his immune system down to zero, and ultimately then make way for the new bone marrow and the new stem cells.
And how long was that operation? I'm sure it was a very long time waiting, despite the length of time it took for yourselves.
So, as I say, it's not necessarily an operation. It's more a long drawn out process. So the IV drip would have lasted for about 3 hours yesterday. The doctors and stuff like that are in the room as well, and there's always a very high risk of his body immediately rejecting the donor cells. So you're kind of nervously waiting for the 3 hours to finish, and then there's, he's been monitored 24/7 around the clock for the past 48 hours in a build up to this to make sure he's strong enough for it, and he'll continue to be monitored around the clock now for the next few weeks. So we're really, although the transplant is done and it gives us a bit of hope that his body hasn't rejected anything, that there's always a very high risk of something happening now in the near future. And we know that firsthand. We're one of the few families, I suppose, that are going into this for the second time. So yeah, we know what to expect. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. So we are quite nervous about the weeks to come, but we're prepared for it as well, if that makes
And
sense.
do you remain in the Netherlands now until you're kind of out of that zone, that danger zone?
So we'll remain in the Netherlands throughout the danger zone, which we imagine will be another 4 to 6 weeks, but we also need to remain here as outpatients for maybe the same length of time again. So it all just depends on complications that are to come, whatever infections he develops, how easy they are to treat. And because ultimately he's going to have no immune system whatsoever for the next few weeks. And obviously we do everything we can to prevent him getting infections, but it's impossible really when you have zero immune system. He can give himself an infection basically with what's already in his body. So we'll be here at least for another 10 weeks, if best case scenario.
And what about Zach himself? I'm sure the process on his body was quite tiring. How is he feeling himself now?
So the first week of treatment, he was flying it really. Like he was, we got to go out every day, and the hospital here is fantastic. The facilities are amazing. There's playgrounds everywhere and toys everywhere, and so we definitely made the most of the first week as an inpatient. Over the weekend there, we noticed we could clearly see the chemotherapy starting to do its job, and it's really totaled him, to be honest with you. He's been sleeping more or less for the last 3 or 4 days and not eating. He was very, very sick over the weekend. So the doctors here decided to put in his feeding tube through his nose. So it's just a tube that goes through his nose and down into his stomach. So we got that done on Monday. So that's obviously just to help with his strength for the transplant and what's to come after that. So he's in good enough spirits, but sleeping more or less all day and all night. Thankfully his sickness has kind of gone away now as well, but he's getting a lot of fluids and stuff, so his body would have swollen up, and his eyes and his face and stuff like that. So it's difficult to watch.
Yeah, and you mentioned there that you have been through it before. Do you see this? Do you see any positives? You know, you're going through this journey for a second time. Do you see any repetition that you think, I know we have to go through this now, but there is this, do you preempt the next stage yourselves?
Yeah, it's a good point. So if we were going through this the first time, we, for example, when Zach does get an infection and things become quite panicky, we know that there is a light at the end of that because we've done it before. With Patrice, when she got her transplant, it was kind of coming up to the stage that Zach's in now, where she would have been admitted to ICU twice. So he might not end up in ICU, but if we know that even if he does, he has every fighting chance to get out of it as well, because we've seen it firsthand with Patrice, and she's right now, she's as strong as she ever was.
And in terms of Zach, whenever he comes back to Ireland, what kind of care will he need then?
He will go through multiple blood tests. So he's got a central line installed that goes through his chest and into his heart. So it's ultimately to make the blood testing procedure a lot easier on the body. So they don't need to get, you know, their skin pricked constantly every day. Mm-hmm. So this is basically just connected up to that line. So when Zach's home, he will be up and down to Dublin for many, many months. And he'll be going through a lot of physiotherapy and stuff just to get his body working again. But I suppose it all depends. It really just depends on the next few weeks and how well he comes out of, yeah, all of what's to come.
Take it step by step. Exactly, and yeah. Was the entire family able to go with you? You know, Patrice continues to get treatment, so did she have to remain back home?
So we'd done some fundraising, and thankfully, with the help of the community, we were able to get absolutely everybody over here. It's fantastic. It's amazing, and it's worked so well with Zach over the weekend and the
last
few days.
That's so important to Zach as well, to have everybody that's he's familiar with around him.
Exactly. Yeah, like you could see his little perky personality just dropping tremendously there over the last couple of days. And you know, it's just a matter of me scooting over to the house that we've rented, picking up the kids, bringing them over, and the kids can play in his room. And you know, we took Zach out on the wheelchair for a little while yesterday and the day before, and even just watching his brothers and sisters playing in the wee playgrounds in the hospital, you know, it really, really lifts his spirits. And as well as that, the grandparents are here watching them at the house, myself and Patrice, depending on the situation at the time. But, you know, we're either both at the hospital with Zach or we're rotating, you know, day in, day out. And Patrice has been able to get the neighbouring hospital to take her on board as an outpatient as well, which is fantastic. So there's a lot of collaboration between St. James's, Crumlin, and Temple Street, and the hospitals over here as well. So
I'm sure that was a fear, you know, when you knew you had to travel to the Netherlands. I'm sure Patrice was in fear, would she have to stay at home? But that's amazing that she's able to receive her care over there too.
Exactly. Now, she does still need to travel home at least once a month. So she'll be flying to Dublin on the 7th of July. So she'll be going over there to her main consultant, and you know, getting all of her usual tests and stuff like that done that she would usually get when we go down to Dublin. So that's still happening. She'll still be going over at least once a month. So far, she's had a chemo week last week. It's caused a little bit of problems for her, but you know, she's still as strong as she ever was, and so far so good. And hopefully it stays like that.
And you spoke as well about that support from the community here back home, and everybody is thinking of you. And it's great to hear then, you know, this update of your journey. But that support is so important now going forward as well. You still need all that support.
Exactly. You know, it's to be honest, the support we got from the community was so overwhelming at the start. Like it's unbelievable, and it's even difficult for me to talk about how generous people are and how much they've actually helped. You know, I'm going to concentrate on Zach and Patrice now, but you know, once this is all over, I'll be doing everything to give back to the community. It's really opened up my eyes of how good people are, yeah, and continue to be. Like, it's, you know, it's not even over now. There's loads more people have been reaching out to me, and they're setting up different things. And you know, even the drive that Highland Radio had kind of publicised as well there with Leslie, Dennis and Lee in support of Zach and another little girl that's arrived over here to the Netherlands, Cassie. So Patrice has met her and her family yesterday. So it's just fantastic. Like, it's not just us going through this. It seems to be the whole community, and it's very much appreciated.
Yeah, and even those thoughts and prayers, I'm sure, is so comforting for yourselves.
Unbelievable, absolutely unbelievable. You know, we did see it firsthand with Patrice, and you know, it's amazing how the support continues. And again, I genuinely have no words at the minute. I suppose when this is all over, I'll try and figure something out to give back. But well, one thing at a time.
That's it. And that GoFundMe page is still live as well for anybody interested. Gary, thank you so much for joining me, and we wish Zach all the best, and we hope he keeps making progress, and we see you all back home very soon. Thank you very much.
Really appreciate it. Thank you.
That is Gary McCross and their father of Zach. So we're thinking about them, and the entire Donegal is as they're on that journey. We'll be back in a couple of minutes.
Watch the show live now on YouTube, Facebook and at highlandradio.com.
Now, the government is being urged to rethink its plans to increase personal injury awards. It comes as the central bank reports the cost of settling motor claims rose 23% in the first 6 months of 2024 compared to 2023. It found the cost of motor claims settled between January and June last year was €414 million. The government plans to increase the cost of personal injury awards, and the Alliance for Insurance Reform believe that this would be detrimental to customers. I'm joined by CEO for the Alliance for Insurance Reform, Brian Hanley. Good morning, Brian.
Good morning.
So we'll start first with these figures that the cost of settling motor claims went up 23%. Those figures are very stark.
It's a very significant rise, and in just 6 months. So the cost of settling motor claims is largely made up of the volume of claims in the period, the cost of repairs, and then the cost of any personal injuries. And today's report from the central bank shows increases in the volume of claims and in the cost of repairs in an amount that's quite steep, really, in such a short period of time. But the big worry we have now is that the government looks poised to increase the personal injury awards by 17%, meaning all three legs of this stool will be increasing. And if that happens, I think what we're seeing with premiums going up month on month, this is only going to get worse if the government go ahead with this increase.
And what do you think the reality is for consumers? Do you think they'll just opt not to have insurance?
Well, God, I certainly hope that that's not the case. But I know the rates of insurance in the country aren't as good as elsewhere. Although I think with detection rates increasing, hopefully that will improve the level of insurance. But there's no doubt that the cost of living has people really to the pin of their collar at the moment.
They just can't afford
it. And what we don't need is, I suppose, for any additional burdens. And bear in mind, too, personal injury awards are already far higher in this country than any other in Europe. So we're not asking for anything that's unreasonable. They're still far higher than other countries. And we just don't want to add additional challenges when inflation is driving up the cost of repairs and we're seeing the volume of claims increase, because motorists just can't afford really to have any more increases.
And do we know why they are so high compared to other parts of the world?
This, I suppose, has been the way for a very long time. But the government, the last government to its credit, did take steps to try and address the size of awards, and indeed had a fairly large insurance action plan to try and get the cost of insurance and access to cover under control. So in 2021, they introduced the personal injury guidelines, and that replaced the Book of Quantum, which essentially is the table by which judges assess injuries and appropriate awards for the type and severity of the injury. And the new guidelines that came in 2021 did help bring awards down by 30%. I mean, still far higher than other countries. I know there was a report only a few years back that found that awards in Ireland were 440% higher than in England.
Crazy.
So we had a long way to go to get them back to something a bit more comparable to other countries. And the worry is, if the guidelines that came in 2021 brought awards down by, let's say, 30%, a 17% increase now stands to obliterate half of that. And then they're set to review the awards every 3 years. But there's another problem as well. And it's not just the direct increase that no doubt will be passed on to policyholders. If we're increasing awards every 3 years like this, it's going to discourage people from settling their claims at the Injuries Board, which is where we want claims settled, because it's much quicker and a lot cheaper because you reduce the legal expenses associated with claims. So I think for that reason as well, it's really important the government just press pause now on putting in an increase, because today's figures are very stark and we know premiums are going up month on month and people just can't afford for them to go up much more.
Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned there, you know, that increase, but when you take the cost of living into account, you mentioned they were decreased by 30%, you add on then that 17% increase, and then you add on the cost of living, they're effectively returning to where they were.
that's the worry, isn't it? I mean, that, and we're only two and a half years away from the next increase. I mean, the cycle by which the awards are reviewed, they're just too close together. We haven't given these new guidelines time to bed in because there's a lag time with all claims and when they're settled and so on. So what we need really, I think, is just to press pause on this. I think the review periods need to be extended. And I think a top priority for the government with its new action plan for insurance reform coming out later this year is to get more cases settled at the injuries board, because they'll do it in half the time and awards are about the same.
And I suppose that benefits the consumer and, you know, those that are paying out then as well. It's a win-win if you do that.
Absolutely. And so the central bank report today also looked beyond motor at kind of public liability insurance that, you know, local businesses and charities and sports groups need to carry. And a couple of points on that. One, they were very clear that the average award, whether you settled at the injuries board or in litigation, was exactly the same.
Right.
But the difference were the legal fees. Legal fees at the injuries board were about €600. But if they got the case into litigation, legal fees were €24,500. And all of that has to be paid for by policyholders. So unless it's a very complex case, claimants certainly don't lose out by settling at the injuries board. And indeed, they'll get their award in about half the time. So it's really an important message, I think, to let people know that you will get the same award at the injuries board, but you'll get it in half the time. And then for policyholders, if that happens, premiums should come down because we're reducing the overall cost, particularly around the legal fees.
Because that £24,000, if it was a business that had to pay that, that could close a business.
Oh, legal fees. I mean, it's astronomical sum of money. And it's nearly the same amount as the actual award. Average awards are €26,000 and the legal costs on average in the litigation channel are €24,500. So you can see what you're doing to the overall cost of settling a claim. And look, nobody has any issue with very complex or contentious cases, you know, people taking that legal advice and it, you know, might need longer for the case to play out and so on, or even ultimately go to court. But for the vast majority of minor or moderate injuries, the Injuries Resolution Board is very well equipped. There's one other point that I just think it's worth mentioning. While the news was pretty bleak on the motor side in terms of the increase in the cost of claims, on the liability side, we have seen the cost of claims come down by as much as 10% in the first 6 months of last year. And in that context, there's really no excuse for insurance premiums for your local childminder or corner shop or pub or hotel or indeed any of them involved in the tourism industry who are also really impacted by this. With awards, the cost of awards coming down, it's well past time that we would see premiums coming down to match it.
And that's been the age old argument that, you know, we've had this discussion for so long about the cost of insurance, that it's not being passed on to the consumer.
Huge problem, absolutely. And I mean, and the figures today are very stark in that regard. And I mean, I'm pleased that the new government, when it came in, renewed its commitment to tackling insurance reform. And certainly from our perspective, it's all about delivery now. We need to see more competition, I think, in the liability market, which might help drive down the cost of insurance because the market becomes a little bit more competitive. And we haven't seen new entrants in a while. But with all the reforms that came in the last 5 years, whether it's the changes to duty of care or the personal injury guidelines, it's a very attractive and profitable market for insurers. But I think we just need to get that message out, and the Office to Promote Competition in the Insurance Market in the Department of Finance needs to do a really good job on that over the next few years for all our sake.
And do you feel that the government does listen, but do you feel that the issue is they're not acting fast enough on this?
I think the government deserves a lot of credit for the last action plan on insurance reform. I mean, they delivered 66 different actions, some of them really quite substantial, in the hope. And then frankly, they gave the insurers everything they said they needed for premiums to come down. And I think it must be galling for them, as it is for every one of us when we go to renew our motor insurance or anything else, to see premiums going up. However, I mean, the big concern, today's concern, is the fact that in the next week or two, they stand ready to increase awards that are already higher than any other country. And that is just completely counterproductive and is going to make matters worse for motorists up and down the country.
And is there any process or any regulation that governs how Ireland can have such high premiums as opposed to other countries? Is there any European-wide regulation in relation to this?
No, I suppose there are certain regulations, but they tend to be more around competition or around financial probity and so on. I think it's very hard to justify. And one of the size of premiums in this country relative to others, and I know one of the reasons that insurers point to is the legal system here and the costs of claims here. And they are right that, you know, the legal fees associated with settling claims are too high and are often unnecessary. But really, insurers are sitting here making in profits that are 2.5 times the international norm for public liability claims. Their margin was, I think, 13% in the last central bank.
So it's not as if the cost of our legal system is really costing them in the end.
Well, of course, right? Because we policyholders pay for everything. It's the same in everything, and it's hugely frustrating. So I think, look, while it's important, we tackle these issues, and we will continue pressing the government to make sure that they don't increase awards at a time when the volume of claims is going up and when the cost of repairs has led to significant increases. And look, we can all do our little bit too, and shopping around when it comes to our premiums does help to nudge the insurance market in the right direction. And I know it's a chore to have to do it, but we can all do our little bit to make them more competitive if they see that we're willing to change insurers to get a better deal.
Yeah. Brian Hanley, CEO of the Alliance for Insurance Reform, thank you so much for joining me this morning. Now, many of you will be glad to hear that as of today, a new likely scam label will be added to text messages that users receive from companies or organisations that have not registered with the Commission for Communications Regulation. This is in a bid to protect mobile users from falling victim to scams. I'm joined by Freddie McBride from Comreg. Good morning to you, Freddie.
Good morning, Michaela. How are you?
I'm good. So this will be widely welcome. Talk to us a little bit about this likely scam label. How does it work?
Sure, yeah. So many of you will be aware that scam calls and texts are a big societal problem. And, you know, they cost society about 300 million euros per year. And of that, about 125 million can be attributed to scam texts. So what we're trying to do really is to restore trust in calling and sending messages. So we've implemented what's called an SMS sender ID registry. So you'll know from, if you look in your message threads on your phone, you've got messages there from your friends and family, and also from organizations that you might be a customer of or a patient of. So it could be from a delivery company, from your doctor about an appointment, your dentist, that type of thing. So what we've done is we've implemented this registry. So organisations using these sender IDs, they need to register them with us. And when they're registered, then, you know, the message will pass through to customers without any issue. But from today, if they're not registered, then they will be modified. So the SMS sender ID will be modified to the words likely scam. And that is a notification to the end user to treat that message with caution and not to click in any links in it or not to make call any numbers that are contained in the message. Now, what we would say is we have this period now of where the likely scam will be implemented. Mm-hmm. And it's, I suppose, a wake-up call to businesses out there who have not already registered their sender IDs to do so as quickly as possible.
Yeah, that's very important because it could be a call from a hospital, it could be a call from a doctor. These are essential calls, but, you know, this likely scam label, people will welcome this so much that they will, you know, follow this. And so many people have been caught with scams that they're very unlikely to engage with someone who isn't registered with yourselves.
Yeah, and that's the thing. But what we would say, particularly in the early days of this now, is, you know, we are concerned about, you know, legitimate traffic. Like the example you gave from a doctor, that those sender IDs would be modified. So what we'd say is, you know, if you get a message, you could be expecting a message maybe from your doctor, to look at it, treat it with caution. Don't, as I say, don't call any numbers or click on any links in the message. But what you can do is verify it independently. So if you do think it's your doctor, what we would recommend you do is give your doctor a call, tell them that you got this message, that it came up with likely scam. And then what your doctor can do then is they can contact us and they can register their sender ID. And within a day or so, that message will be in our, or that sender ID will be in our registry, and there should be no issues from there forward.
And this label is so important for elderly or vulnerable people who are living alone, and hopefully it will, you know, save money for people, which they're losing.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, I mentioned the figures there. It is a real societal problem, and it causes a lot of anxiety for people. Mm-hmm. You know, they're afraid to answer the phone at times, or, you know, they're unsure. And, you know, I suppose our overall objective with this is to restore trust in those communications tools that we use every day to keep in contact with family and friends and to do business.
And do you see this being extended? I know it's obviously at a very early stage, but do you see it being extended to phone calls?
Well, we're implementing a number of interventions. So this particular one that started today is for SMS. We've implemented a number of things already for voice calls. And since last October, when we started to implement these measures, we've blocked about 50 million calls, a little bit over that. And there are still
another
couple of
those measures.
That's
actually frightening because it shows you how much calls are going through.
Yeah, indeed, indeed. You know, these are being blocked completely, so they're not getting to the end user, which is great. And we have seen a marked reduction, but we still have a couple of more interventions to implement, and we'll get, you know, that number will go even higher in terms of calls that are not getting to the end user and then not causing consumer harm.
So how can organisations or businesses get in touch to ensure that they're on this register?
Well, if they haven't already registered a sender ID, they can go to comreg.ie/senderID. And there's very clear instructions there, a step-by-step process that they can follow. It's essentially an online form that they can fill in. So there's two steps to it, really. The first thing we do is we validate the organization's credentials. That's important because, if you like, this is the concept of a circle of trust, and we don't want to have any bad actors in it. So when we verify the credentials of the organization, and then they can register a sender ID. And, you know, something that this is made up of letters and numbers, and something that will be meaningful to their customers, mm-hmm. that they can expect to receive messages on.
And in terms of the government's role in this, do you think that there is still a lot of work to be done on their behalf?
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, government has been supportive in terms of, you know, facilitating us in implementing these. I wouldn't say we're there yet. For example, this intervention today addresses only one part of the SMS market, and that's, you know, what we call application to person messaging. So this is the type of thing between businesses and customers. Mm-hmm. But we don't have protection at the moment for person to person SMS messages. And what we need for that is an SMS scam filter, is what it's called. And government is on the record this year as saying that they would bring legislation forward to implement an SMS scam filter. And the sooner that happens, the better protection the community will have.
And because scams are so sophisticated now and scammers seem to be a step ahead, is this something that will be continually reviewed then on your behalf?
Yeah, absolutely. Scammers are very agile. So what we need to do is, when you close down a particular avenue to a scammer, they'll find some other vulnerability or weakness in the system. And then we need to be alert to that, and we need to be able to pivot and, deal with that particular issue. In many cases, we need to be able to anticipate it and make sure we do something in advance of it happening. But in some cases, we will have to react as well to protect end users. Yeah.
And sorry, just one final question. Maybe you did mention it, but this just relates to Irish businesses at the moment.
Yes, but it would also relate to businesses who are providing goods and services into Ireland.
Okay.
So they would have relationships with SMS providers into the mobile networks in Ireland. So they need to become part of this kind of circle of trust, if you like. You know, because we understand that the nature of business is now global. You know, people do a lot of online shopping and things like that. So we need to be able to facilitate and cater for that market while protecting end users as well.
Yeah, there is a long way to go, but Freddie, this is a major step, and it's definitely a step in the right direction.
It is indeed. There's a good bit to go on this yet. What we would say is from the 3rd of October, these messages that people receive, you know, we won't be marking them likely scam anymore, we'll actually be blocking them.
Okay.
So what I would say to any businesses that might be listening out there, or any, it's not just businesses, it could be, you know, your GA club, mm-hmm. it could be your school, that they, you know, go to comreg.ie/senderid and register their sender IDs now, and don't leave it till the 2nd of October to do it. You can do it now.
Yeah.
And we get it. What we'll do then is literally validate all of the organisations using the service, and that will, you know, ultimately protect end users.
Yeah, that is very important. Freddie McBride from Comreg, thank you so much for joining us this morning. I think this is a great step in the right direction. Even this morning, the amount of comments coming in relating to scams. And I think it's particularly important for elderly people and those more vulnerable that may be living on their own. And, you know, it's so easy to fall victim to a scam, but having that likely scam label now on a text is, it does make you think twice. And I know even my phone, it comes up now, scam call, and it does, as Freddie was talking about there, just declines the call straight away. But yeah, it's definitely a great step. One comment in from a listener. I would like to highlight that the Irish Times has a photo up of the crash scene in Carndonagh yesterday. Have people no respect? That paper is a disgrace. It's certainly no respect for all involved. Praying for all involved. Yeah, that is a discussion that is widely held sometimes in relation to should the photo of a crash scene be posted. I don't think, even if family has been notified, I don't think there's ever a right time, because that's someone's loved one. And, you know, just having that reminder that their loved one has died there, or, you know, they were seriously injured in that crash, just seeing that. And once it's on the internet, it's there forever. So I don't personally agree with photos of crash scenes ever being used. Well, that's it for the 9 till noon show this morning. My thanks to Carling Orr and Shannon Wilkin. John Breslin is up around the northwest, and we'll be back tomorrow morning for Friday's 9 till noon show. Until then, good morning.